This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Discover Lafayette is recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette, Louisiana. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. Today's guest is Deacon Barney Lejeune, Executive Director of the Jacob Crouch Suicide Prevention Services. The foundation was started in 2005 by the family and friends of Jacob Crouch following his death by suicide. At that time, there were very limited resources available to those grieving the loss of a loved one to suicide. The stigma associated with suicide meant that education on warning signs and intervention were not very prevalent. Before Barney joined the Jacob Crouch Foundation, he spent his career managing computer departments for local businesses. Barney Lejeune became involved with the Jacob Crouch organization after the death of his beautiful daughter, Andrea Beth, to suicide in 2014. Barney served on the Jacob Crouch Board of Directors before accepting the position of Executive Director in 2016. He was recently ordained a permanent deacon for the Catholic Diocese of Lafayette in May 2016. And before we get into this, Barney, I do want to say that I know you work tirelessly to deliver suicide awareness and prevention training throughout our area, and we really look forward to hearing your discussion and learning more about what we can all do to prevent this needless tragedy. Welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And suicide is definitely a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It really is. When you reached out to me, I realized that I had heard of the Jacob Crouch Foundation back in 2005. I had some young friends that went to STM, family friends, and I remember when he committed suicide, I think they were in early college at that point, and this organization was founded as a direct result of the family's loss. Would you talk about the history of the Jacob Crouch organization?
I can tell you a little bit about the history. I've only been involved for about 3 years. But after Jacob's death, his friends threw a big party in honor of his death. It was called Crouchstock in May of 2006. And they raised some $30,000. And they gave it to Michelle, his mom. And she began this foundation as an effort to prevent others from having to deal with a death of a loved one to suicide. And initially, it was named the Jacob Crouch Foundation. I think it went that way for 4 or 5 years, and then the name changed to simply the Crouch Foundation. And again, it was the Crouch Foundation for about 5 years. When I got involved in 2015, we recognized that a lot of people didn't know who the Crouch Foundation was or what we did. Mm-hmm. They knew about the Jacob Crouch Foundation, but if somebody said, Crouch Foundation,
right.
Who are you? What do you do?
Right.
So the board of directors at that time decided that it would be best to go back to Jacob Crouch. And because of the stigma, as you mentioned, around suicide, nobody wanting to talk about it, mm-hmm. if we're serious about preventing suicide, let's put that in our name. Mm-hmm. So we took the bold step of just putting it out there.
Right.
So we became Jacob Crouch Suicide Prevention Services. And we kind of changed our logo, and we put a semicolon in our logo. I don't know if you're aware or if your listeners are aware. But the semicolon has become known as the international symbol for those that struggle with mental illness and suicide ideation. A young lady by the name of Amy Bluell lost her father maybe 8 or 9 years ago, and she started this initiative called the Semicolon Tattoo Project. And it was to raise awareness of mental illness and suicide. And it became internationally known, and mm-hmm. you see a lot of people all over the place with tattoos, maybe on their neck, maybe on their wrist or on their thumb.
A semicolon.
Oh. And what I do when I see someone is I will ask, who is it for? And whoever has it always wants to tell me what it's for. Mm-hmm. I know what it's for. I want to know who do they have it for. And many times I'll learn maybe it's for a brother or a sister that is struggling with mental illness, or maybe one that has died of suicide. Sometimes it's for themselves.
Right.
So
the survivors have just as much of a cross to bear.
They do.
Right.
So We have been trying to promote mental health and suicide prevention throughout Acadiana, mm-hmm. and that's our goal.
Right. So. Where are your offices? Are you in Lafayette?
We are. We have a small office off of Duce Road in mm-hmm. Lafayette. Mm-hmm. Very small. I work a lot of times from home, but, yeah. you know, we do have an office here.
Right. Yes. Well, if I may ask about your own family background. As I mentioned, your daughter, Andrea Beth, committed suicide 4 years ago. And was this something, did you have any awareness of suicide and signs to look for? Can you talk about that?
Well, Andrea was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when she was 15. And bipolar disorder is a very tough diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But those individuals that follow their regimen of medication usually do very well. Andrea didn't always follow her medication. Her death was obviously unexpected. It was a shock to us. As I told you earlier, suicide was not on my radar until her death. But once, that event had occurred, I started reading and trying to learn about it. And mm-hmm. that's when I recognized how much of a crisis suicide is in America today.
Right.
Most people don't recognize that the last year that the CDC has full complete statistics is 2016. And in that year, almost 45,000 people took their lives by suicide.
Oh, my goodness.
In comparison, every day you turn on the evening news and there's a murder. Mm-hmm. There were fewer than 20,000, about 19,000, I think 700 murders that same mm-hmm. year. So more than double that number took their own life by suicide.
As we tape this, I know there's been a heightened awareness about suicide, especially with famous individuals yes. like Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain.
Right.
And it's really raised awareness, I think, in mainstream society
it
that
has.
You never know what's going on in someone's personal life.
Right. Most research indicates that those that take their own life, there are some signs prior to their death. Mm-hmm. And that's what we try to do is teach as many people as possible those warning signs. And some of those are just changes mm-hmm. in behavior and personality and in eating habits and sleeping habits, maybe just a general agitation. Mm-hmm. Those are all warning signs. Some of the ones that I hear quite often through our Survivor of Suicide support group is people getting life matters in order. You know, maybe giving away prized possessions, maybe getting, their house cleaned up or whatever. So that's other warning signs uh-huh. that people need to be on the lookout for.
So the services that you offer to help raise awareness, let's talk a little bit more about that. I know you're talking about changes in behavior. Are there classes that are offered, Barney? Are there particular classes, reading materials? What can people do when they come to the organization for assistance?
Myself, along with several volunteers, are certified to teach the QPR Gatekeeper Training Program. And the letters QPR stand for Question, Persuade, and Refer. This is a program that's been around since in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It was developed by Dr. Paul Cornett in the state of Washington. It's a very recognized program. And the nice part about it can be taught in 1 to 2 hours. It's designed to be taught to a group of about 25 individuals at a time. So we try to teach this free mm-hmm. as much as we can. We're a nonprofit, but we try to do it for free. And we will teach this to civic groups, social groups, employees, mm-hmm. you name it. Mm-hmm. The other program that we offer is something we have developed called Ask, Listen, and Get Help. And this is a program that's shorter, and we do this presentation to junior high and high school students. So we will go in and maybe spend, before school let out, I spent 3 days at Opelousas High, classroom by classroom.
Small groups
mm-hmm. doing this presentation called Ask, Listen, and Get Help. Mm-hmm. And the thing with suicide is, You've got to ask the question. If you notice our program, Ask, Listen, Get Help, Question, Persuade, Refer, you've got to ask that question. And it's very difficult to ask someone, are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? But you've got to ask that question. It's very tough.
In your research and experience, I mean, are people telling the truth when they're asked that? If they're really
depressed?
Most
of the time they are. Uh-huh. Those that take their own life many times they have two traits or two things going on. One is they feel they're all alone and nobody cares, and they feel that they're a burden. So if you take the time to say, Mary, Lisa, John, whomever, are you thinking of suicide? What goes on in their head? She cares. He cares. Mm-hmm. They've taken time to listen to me. Mm-hmm. And that's what you've got to do, is you've got to take time to listen. So our program, ask. You ask the question, and they're going to be honest, because most people that take their own life don't want to die. They want the pain to stop.
Right.
They're in just such psychic pain, they don't know what to do. So you ask the question, are you thinking of suicide? Mm-hmm. And then you listen. Let them talk.
Are there age groups? I know you're talking about being in the schools, I guess the middle schools and high schools. And I had read that now there was an Act 219, the Jason Flatt Act, where teachers and school administrators are required to receive 2 hours of suicide prevention training each school year. Is there a higher episode of suicide in the younger people? Or is that just the best time to get out awareness for education purposes?
The 15 to 24 year age group, suicide is the second leading cause of death. And until a few years ago, it was a third leading cause of death. The first leading cause of death is accidents mm-hmm. of any kind, automobile, mm-hmm. four-wheelers, hunting, boating. But the second leading cause of death was homicide or murder. But now it's suicide, and it's rising even faster than ever.
So being in the schools, I guess, not only for the teachers, but the students,
yes.
so that they can, if they're feeling depressed, they have an outlet, but also they can, if they see their friends changing their behavior, they can maybe have a safe place to go talk to a counselor to say, I don't know what to do, but I'm concerned about my friend.
Absolutely. The friend is a key there. Mm-hmm. Because many times a friend that's struggling with thoughts of suicide might say, look, I'm really struggling with this, but don't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. So what we teach the adolescents is you've got to tell someone. You can't wait until tomorrow. You've mm-hmm. got to do it today. Mm-hmm. And almost every student has a trusted adult at school. It may not be the counselor, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. If it's the coach or teacher, you've got to go to that, or we tell them, you've got to go and say, hey, my friend's struggling with thoughts of suicide.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So we try to teach the teachers, the counselors, as well as the students. Everybody has to know about this. Mm-hmm. And we can't wait until tomorrow. You've got to do something today. Tomorrow could be too late.
So the schools you're in, are you doing this pursuant to the Jason Flatt Act, or are you just going in local schools as the foundation, the Jacob Crouch Foundation?
We teach the QPR program to the teachers to meet the requirements
of the Jason
Flatt Act.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then for the students, it's just for awareness and prevention.
Right.
Yes.
Right. It's just so sad thinking about it. I've lost really too many friends. It's horrible thinking about how many friends I've lost to suicide. And they've typically been highly educated individuals. People that were almost had larger than life personalities, you know, fun, witty. And when I think about this, I realize looking back that we were all shocked for each one. That maybe somebody close to them saw it, but the average person wouldn't have picked up on signals. So I was really happy to hear about the Jacob Crouch organization. And if you could spend some more time, Deacon Barney, talking about signs that we should look for. If we can just kind of give an overview of some things that parents and friends should look for, and family members
right.
should look for.
As I mentioned earlier, signs of getting life matters in order. Maybe an adolescent might give prized possessions away. I recently did a presentation for the Rotary Group in Abbeville, the Rotary Club in Abbeville. When the meeting was over, an accountant came up to me and told me that just a couple of months earlier, he had an elderly gentleman in his office. He had spent all afternoon documenting his 401k, his other assets, his other liabilities. The old guy went home and took his life.
Oh,
he said, had I known to ask, are you thinking of suicide? What was the guy doing? Mm-hmm. Getting his life matters in order.
Mm-hmm.
And there's story after story of this. But most people that take their own life, as I mentioned, don't want to die. But there's a feeling of hopelessness, a feeling of it's never going to get better. Many times there's agitation. They can't sleep. They can't eat. You know, so mm-hmm. those are other warning signs, just general agitations, maybe mm-hmm. anger. A lot of times anger will come in because they're just, they can't find peace.
Right. So. We had a neighbor that killed himself in 2005, and a well-known doctor in town, and he hadn't been sleeping.
Yes.
And he really had had some problems sleeping, and it's just so sad thinking about the loss of that individual, just one that I'm thinking of. Yeah. But what for survivors? There has to be incredible grief, and you know, well, you can speak for yourself, you and your wife. But there, can you talk about that?
I can't. When we lose someone, we always want to put the blame on somebody. If it's a murder, obviously you can claim the murderer. If it's cancer, it was a cancer. If it was the automobile accident, we might want to claim the road or the automobile or the other driver or somebody. But when it's suicide, who do we blame? We have to blame our loved one, which is difficult. And it's one of the things we don't want to do. And there's this horrible feeling of guilt. Could have I done more? Why didn't I see the signs? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I ask that question? Why didn't I do this? So the grief experienced by loved ones of a suicide victim, debilitating many times. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Diocese of Lafayette, and this was prior to my ordination as a deacon, and I asked, what does the diocese do? And what I learned was nothing. So I spent a couple of months calling other dioceses in America, and I found that very few are doing anything.
I'm surprised, but they do so much. I mean, you know.
But when it comes to grief, especially mm-hmm. suicide grief, very few people mm-hmm. are addressing it. So we began a survivor of suicide support group here in Lafayette, and I tell the story. We began this in January of 2017. We had a lady that drove from Ville Platte for about 8 months. She came twice a month. She had lost her mother 42 years ago. She was 60.
Oh.
She was 18 when her mother died. Mm. She had two younger brothers. Her dad worked offshore, so he wasn't there a lot. She ended up having to raise her brothers. Her mother wasn't there for her courtship, for her wedding planning, for her wedding, mm-hmm. for her pregnancies and childbirth and child rearing. And the rest of the family had moved on, so she had nobody to talk to about this.
But that hole was still in her heart.
She just felt all alone, and like you said, a huge hole in her heart mm-hmm. that she couldn't fill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she came to the support group, and she recognized those feelings are natural. It's okay to have those feelings. Yeah. And she's not alone. There are others that mm-hmm. have those same feelings. Mm-hmm. And she was able to talk to others that had experienced a similar loss. And it just helped us tremendously.
Yeah.
And that's just one example.
So people can contact your organization to find out more about that? Or do they go to first?
They come to our office. And
how do they contact you, Deacon?
Our telephone number is 337-234-1828. That's 1-828. Or they can email me at Barney, just B-A-R-N-E-Y, at jacobcrouch.org.
And what is the website, please?
Jacobcrouch.org, www.jacobcrouch.org.
Yeah, it's a nice website.
We also have a presence on Facebook, and we try to post regularly on Facebook to help those that may be struggling with thoughts of suicide. Mm-hmm. And encouraging them, if they're having thoughts of suicide, to get help. We don't have our own crisis intervention line, but there is a national suicide prevention lifeline. That number is 1-800-273-8255. It's available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It's completely confidential. Mm-hmm. Many times when we do presentations to students, I give out that number and they say, will the cops be knocking on my door in 5 minutes? No. The individuals that answer these lines are trained and they know what to ask. Mm-hmm. And if you're in imminent danger, they might send a cop. But if you're not, they're not going to send a cop.
Right.
Okay. There's also a crisis text line. Many times individuals struggling with depression just don't want to talk. They can't talk. So there's a crisis text line. That number is 741-741, okay? And you can start with anything, with help. I read recently somebody had sent just an emoji of a teardrop. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Start with anything. And again, they're trained. 24 hours a day, it's available, and it's completely confidential as well.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like the younger people, this is a much-needed resource.
It is,
so,
yes.
How does the organization, the Jacob Crouch organization, let me get the name right, Jacob Crouch Suicide Prevention Services, how are you funded?
We are a nonprofit. Our major fundraiser is a letter-writing campaign that we do in September, which is Suicide Prevention Month. And what we do is it's called Suicide Shutout. And what we do is we write letters to individuals asking them to donate to the cause. Mm-hmm. And the cause is suicide prevention. And that's our major fundraising. We also have the ability to fundraise on Facebook and other mm-hmm. places. Many times individuals who have lost a loved one will donate in their honor. So,
right.
Yes.
Do you charge for any of the classes you put on or the services you provide when people reach out to you?
We try to do them all for free. Mm-hmm. We will take a donation if someone wants to give us something,
right.
But we do try to do them for free.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Well, I'm glad to hear that the diocese is partnering with you, because with their large network of churches, I'm sure that's helped spread the word to people that may not have known what was going on. So,
yes.
Yeah.
The other thing we do at the diocese is we offer a Mass of Remembrance the Saturday before Thanksgiving each year. We just started this. And the Saturday before Thanksgiving is known as International Suicide Loss Survivor Day. So we do a Mass at the Cathedral of St. John the Evangelist in downtown Lafayette. And we light a candle. We ask people to call in, and we will put their name on a candle. The first year we did this, I think we had 12 candles. Last year we had 114 candles.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Wow.
So it brings healing to those families that have lost a loved one.
In a beautiful setting.
Right.
It's just a
yes.
gorgeous.
And it's open to anyone.
Church.
You don't have to be Catholic, you know, try to get that out there.
Right. I'd like to take a quick moment to thank one of our new sponsors before we move on, Deacon Barney. I'd like to thank LUS Fiber. They were recently ranked by Harvard University as number one in the nation for price savings. A trailblazer in community broadband services, LUS Fiber can serve your telephone, internet, and television needs. For more information, please visit lusfiber.com. Before we move on, I want to make sure I've covered what you'd like to. Are there any points that we have not raised that you would like to let our listeners know about?
I guess what I'd like to say is if any group, I had someone come to me recently. It was a group of women that met maybe for Pekino, and the coordinator said, would you come teach our little Pekino group, the prevention and warning signs of suicide?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it doesn't have to be, a Rotary Club
right.
or Kiwanis. It can be anything or anybody.
Okay.
Our goal is to teach as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that founded the QPR Institute and the QPR program thinks of QPR as CPR. He said that if I, as I get older, I recognize that I could collapse with a heart attack someday.
Mm-hmm.
If I collapsed, could I ask for help? Probably not. But if somebody's trained in CPR, what could they do? Administer CPR, get help, and hopefully life goes on.
Right.
It's the same thing with suicide. Someone struggling with the thought of suicide probably isn't in a state of mind where they can ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
But if we have enough individuals trained in the warning signs, they can ask them for help, get the help that's needed, and life goes on, and
right.
they can live productive lives.
Right.
So.
Does this kind of training, is it better received in person to groups, or do you have tapes or books that people can read? Do you find that in-person dialogue works better for this?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
We do almost everything in person.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a couple of small videos that we use, but these are 5 minutes or less.
Yeah.
Because once a video goes on too long, people get distracted and they start looking at their cell phones or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to do it in person. We try to do it in small groups because we want this to be effective. We want to
right.
make a difference.
Right. We're here today with Jason Sikora, who works for Raider Solutions, and I see you've been busy writing notes. Jason always has good questions.
I have a tough one in here, too, for you,
yeah.
Barney.
Okay.
First of all, thank you for being here. I appreciate this. Is there a correlation typically between mass shooters and people who have, I don't want to say it that way, those who are mass shooters, because it's such a big thing now, are those people typically people who do struggle with thoughts of suicide, or is there really no correlation there?
There probably is some correlation. One of the leading researchers, I think, is a professor by the name of Dr. Thomas Joyner. He is at Florida State University, and he wrote a book recently on this phenomenon, some mm-hmm. of these mass shooters. And what he believes happens is, you know, a lot of times we might call it murder-suicide. Mm-hmm. He believes that the thought of suicide happens first.
Okay.
That these people have a thought of suicide, and they say, hey, if I'm going to die, you know.
Well, there's certainly something else going on if you're going to murder people besides the suicide, but okay.
Yeah. Many times they do it for mercy. Many times they do it for other means, you know, other methods, whatever.
Gotcha. And this is the tough one. Now that you mentioned this, Jan, this is kind of coming to light more and more as we've seen more mm-hmm. famous people this happen to. And I had no idea that statistic. It's mind-blowing. But do you yet have statistics of number of suicide preventions based on programs like yours? I know that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's very hard. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like someone that has cancer. You know, they go and they get treatment and they're mm-hmm. in remission. Okay. How long are they in remission? We don't know. Okay. So I think that these programs do make a difference mm-hmm. for how long. We don't really know. What I do know is statistics show that 1 in 4 individuals have thoughts of suicide in their lifetime. That's what statistics show. But as I talk to people, I think that number is way too low. I would not be surprised that it's 50% or 60% of individuals mm. at some point in their life have thoughts of suicide. Mm-hmm. Because I encounter people all the time that say, well, I had thoughts of suicide. One of the stories I tell is I went, as you know, we're nonprofit. We beg for money. I went to a restaurant that isn't very far from here, small restaurant in a small town. And the day that I went, the owner was all excited because it was his 35th anniversary. He'd been in business 35 years. I told him why I was there. And he said, wow, that's a great cause. He said, you know, 34, 35, 36 years ago, I had thoughts of suicide every day.
Oh.
And I said, well, how are you now? He said, I'm great. I said, do you have those thoughts now? He said, no. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what I tell students when I do some of my presentations is many times youngsters especially believe, well, if I take my life, it's just me. Mm-hmm. No, it's a whole community. Okay. Had this guy taking his life, what happened to the people that worked mm-hmm. for him? You mm-hmm. know, his restaurant would have probably closed. They'd have lost their jobs. You know, the whole community
is impacted.
His
family, dynamic,
right?
Yeah.
It's not just one person that's impacted mm-hmm. when there's a suicide.
Interesting.
Great question.
Yeah. So I just to clarify, it does appear, though, that those who do take their own life, there is, it's not like they just snap, right? There are signs that are going to be, or are there any issues out there where you've seen where they were really perfectly fine and just something snapped in them?
It's very hard to say.
Certainly.
It's extremely hard to say. But most people that take their lives have been struggling for a long time.
Okay.
You know, Dr. Joyner, in one of the books I read, said that there was an individual that had a 5,000-page suicide note.
Wow.
Okay. With an index and bibliography and everything, you know, footnotes.
Wow.
You know, so how long had he been thinking about that?
What a document to find. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
That must have taken years to compile.
You know? One of the other things that I've tried to read a lot about, and you may have heard of Kevin Hines. Kevin Hines was a young man that jumped from the Golden Gate Bridge in the year 2000. He was 19 years old, and he survived. One of the few that survived. There's been 19 or 20 that have survived in the 80 years of the life of the Golden Gate Bridge. Every one of them that has jumped and survived has been interviewed, and they all say the same thing. As soon as they jumped, their first thought was, what have I done?
Regret.
What have I done?
Mm.
Regret.
Oh.
So, you know, those more than 2,000 mm-hmm. that have jumped and died from that bridge, we can only assume they had the same thought.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow.
One of the other statistics is, women attempt suicide 4 times more often than men, but men complete suicide 3 times more often than women because they use more lethal means.
Guns.
Know,
okay. Whatever. Yes.
Yeah. Guns. I think women are more, they
can
choose.
Take pills.
Yeah,
or,
pills.
Or, yeah, mm-hmm. something like that, or cut themselves or whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And then finally, my last question, I wanted to talk about your programs briefly. You mentioned the two of them that you present. Are these aimed at more people who might be struggling with thoughts of suicide, or to those people to help them recognize those with thoughts of suicide, or both?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Because, you know, we never know who's going to be in our audience. Mm-hmm. If it's somebody with thoughts of suicide, we stress the importance of getting help. You know, don't wait until the last minute. You know, right. Have somebody accountable. You know, okay. We also stress to those that might have loved ones or might have friends, you know, what are the warning signs?
Okay.
So it's both.
Okay. Okay. Good.
Yeah, well, good question.
Well, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, Jan, thank you. Thank you for always having good thoughts. I'd like to thank you so much, Deacon Barney Lejeune from the Jacob Crouch Suicide Prevention Services. I want to encourage people to visit your website, and I think you'd said it was jacobcrouch.org.
Correct.
And yes. They can call 337-234-1828. Each day is a gift, and the sun does come up every day. Right. But to get through the day, sometimes we just need some help and some love.
Absolutely.
And I want to commend you and your organization and all the volunteers and people that have kept this organization going now for 13 years. That's quite an accomplishment.
Oh, thank you.
And quite a legacy, I'm sure, for a very special young man, Jacob Crouch, and your daughter as well. So
thank you.
Thank you for being with us. And I'd like to also thank Raider Solutions and Jason Sikora for taping this show and making Discover Lafayette possible. And to our listeners, thank you for listening today. For this episode and all of our episodes, you can visit discoverlafayette.net. While you're there, please subscribe to our podcast for either your iPhone or your Android device. And please rate and review our podcast. It helps keep our show going. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift. Thank you.